Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 46, recorded January 20th, 2011.
Well, we'd like to welcome our first guest to Aquarimax.
Welcome, Brady.
Yeah, we were interested in Brady's email and thought this would make a great topic to have on the show. So we're going to talk to him about his experience. But first, we'd like to ask him some general questions. So, Brady, how long have you been in the aquarium hobby, and how did you first become interested in it?
That's a good question. I first got interested in aquariums when I was 6 years old. I can remember it pretty well. I went with my mom and my older brother to go buy a birthday present for my older brother. And we stopped in a pet store because my mom thought, you know, that's something that maybe he might like. And I was just dumbfounded at all these fish and things there. And by the time we left, I walked out of there with one of those little 2 gallon bowls with, you know, with a little undergravel filter in it and couple of zebra danios and some dwarf frogs and some other things, and my brother actually didn't get anything from there, but it was a good birthday for me. So that's when I first started, and then, you know, it just kind of went from there. I had lots of numerous different kinds of fish and different pets over the years, and I actually didn't get my first real full-size tank until I was about 12 years old, so okay. That's when I really started rolling with it.
So, how long have you been in the hobby now, then?
Well, you might not want to say that, because then we'll all know how old he is.
Well, that's true. You don't necessarily have to answer that. But, so
you've...
Yeah. So, been since you were about six, and you started out with zebra danios and dwarf frogs, then. Okay.
Yeah.
And what are some of the other species that you've kept? And, like you mentioned, when you got a larger tank, what did you keep in that larger tank?
I started, you know, accumulating different fish and different tanks as people would get tired of them over the years as I got older. I kept, you know, lots and lots of different kinds of freshwater fish. The only thing I haven't really dabbled too much in are cichlids, mostly. I've kept some angelfish and some Oscars and things like that, but nothing, that's about it for the cichlids. But everything else, you know, I've had it, you know, from time to time I've tried all sorts of different fish.
Well, good.
Well, good. It sounds like you've had a pretty broad experience then. Okay, well, what we decided to do the show on, as you know, but for our listeners at home, was your experience with paradise fish. And so we'd like to ask you about your experience keeping them outside specifically. Is what you did, this was last summer?
Yeah, last summer.
Okay. Now, did you keep paradise fish before you decided to keep them outside, or did you decide to keep them because you knew that they were hardy enough to stay outside for part of the year?
Yeah, I'd never had them before that. I just kind of looked at what low temperatures I was going to expect over the summer months where I live. And also, I didn't have any source of power close to where I was keeping my container pond that I built. And so I needed an air breather that could handle lower temperatures, and paradise just fit the bill perfectly. So that's what I went with.
Okay, so it sounds like you did some good research beforehand just to inform you on what was going to work. Okay. So, would you recommend keeping paradise fish to other people just off the bat, having had that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. They kind of have a reputation, I know, of being, you know, somewhat aggressive, quarrelsome, but, you know, to me, I still have the ones that I had last summer. They're in my aquarium indoors, and they're just about like any other, like a gourami or a betta. I would say even less aggressive than a betta. They don't seem to bother any species of fish but their own. And even then, you know, as long as you don't keep two males together, they seem to do just fine.
Okay.
I haven't seen any real aggression from them at all. So I've enjoyed them. I think they're pretty good fish.
How many females do you have to keep with one male?
You know what, I don't know if you need to keep any. If you have just one male, they don't seem to stay together at all or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, you can keep, the females don't bother anybody. They seem to be really, really placed, really docile. So you can keep, I guess, as many as you like, but you don't want to put two males together. I know that.
Okay.
It little quarrelsome when they get together.
Okay. And I guess that makes sense since they're anabantoids and related to betas. Yeah, and I had read about that. I've never actually kept a paradise. So I imagine the species that you keep is just the normal Macropodus opercularis. Is that the one?
Yeah, I just have the red, the blue and red ones.
That's okay.
The ones I ended up getting.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen a variety lately in the pet stores, kind of a powder blue with hardly any red on it, but I prefer the natural ones with the red and the blue. I think they're really beautiful fish.
Yeah. I bought mine from a local breeder down the Salt Lake area, and he had every type that you could imagine, but I just ended up going with just the natural kind because I thought they looked the best as well.
Okay.
But yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, after we're done off the air, maybe I can ask you about that local breeder because I'd be interested in finding out more about that. And that's always the best way to get fish if you can.
Maybe the local breeder wants to be on the resource page.
Yeah, you never know. So that would be interesting to see. Okay, well, I think let's move on to our next question.
Why don't you tell us how you went about setting it up? What the materials that you used and what the process was that you went through to get this outdoor setup going?
All right. Well, I didn't want to spend a whole lot of money, so I just kind of scrounged up what I could and bought what I couldn't find. I just have very limited space where I live, so I in a little flower bed next to my porch there. So I went out and found a 20-gallon tub, one of those rope-handled tubs that almost looks like a giant plastic flower pot.
Okay.
Just bought it for $8 at the local hardware store, and that was my container pond to start out with. And I knew I wanted to keep some potted plants in there, some like a rush or something. And so I needed to build kind of a platform so I could get it close enough to the top of the water line that it wouldn't drown. And luckily, next to my house, there's a lot where they bring in a lot of construction demolition waste, and they have all these truckloads of bricks they bring in, and they have. I don't know if they're juvenile delinquents. They have these kids sorting through these bricks all the time, and they pick out the good ones and put them on pallets, and they throw all this rest away. So I just went and grabbed some brick chunks, half-broken brick chunks, mm-hmm. and kind of made a little pillar in there, a little platform to put this potted plant on. And, well, the first thing I did, though, before I did all that is I got some cinder blocks and raised it up a little bit off the ground so I could siphon water out of it if I needed to, just so I'd be sure that the water... sure that it was raised up a little, mm-hmm.
Right.
So a siphon would work.
Right.
And I set it on there, and then I built my little platform, and I went and bought some aquatic plants. I threw some anacharis. Is that how you pronounce it? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's how I usually have heard it.
Okay, I just went and bought some anacharis, some Brazilian waterweed or whatever from a local pet store. I just threw it in there to see how it would do, and it did wonderfully. This is in kind of late May here.
Okay.
And then I went to a local garden shop that sells pond plants, and I wanted some floating plants, and I bought a rush and a pot, and I also bought some water hyacinths.
Oh, okay.
For floating plants in there. And then, I just went and continued to set it up. I thought, maybe I would want some type of some media for some bacteria to grow on just for filtration purposes, even though I wasn't going to put any power or run any air in it.
Right.
So I got one of those potted plant planters. It looks like just a plastic basket with holes in it. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plant store. It looks like a giant thing that you buy strawberries in, but it's like 2 gallon capacity.
Right.
Oh okay.
Flat. And I filled that up with just red lava rock that I had laying around. Then just set that on top of the platform, and then I put the potted plant on top of that.
Okay.
That would work out pretty well.
Yeah, that's a lot of surface area in that lava rock, so.
Yeah, so that's what I figured as well, since I wasn't going to be pumping air through it or anything like that, but I needed to, get some good surface area, just some type of filtration in there. Yeah. And so that's what I did. And I let those plants settle in there for a while and get going before I could put the fish in. I had to keep an eye on the low temperatures every night. I put a thermometer out there, and every morning, before the sun came up or right after, I'd go out and look at the thermometer, and I could assume that would be my nighttime low temperature, because mm-hmm. it gets coldest right before dawn.
Right.
And I was just waiting for it to get a little bit above 50 degrees, because that's what I was told that the fish would be able to do well at. So So I did that, waited until in early June it finally got to be where I was seeing nighttime low temperatures high enough that I thought the fish could tolerate it well. And I bought a trio of paradise fish, one male and two females, and I just put them in the pond there.
It sounds like a really good setup. Now, did you, how long did you have to wait, more or less, from the time you put the plants in until you put the fish in?
It was probably about 3 weeks. That was just because I set it up so early. We had kind of a warm spell in early spring, and I thought it was going to warm up quick, and this late spring, I don't know if you can remember from last year, but yeah. In Utah last year, there was just a really wet spring and early summer.
Right.
Yeah, we remember.
Yeah, it was a very wet spring. So you're in elevation in Logan area. You're a little higher than we are. So what is the elevation exactly there? Do you know?
I think I'm about 4,200 feet elevation.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a few hundred feet higher than we are, I think, from where that makes sense. So it tends to get you get more snowfall there, and
yeah.
And it lasts longer, and the frosts last longer and everything, from what I understand. Do you know what the average last day of frost is?
Well, I'm not sure, really. But, you know, one thing I can tell you, I'm a student here at Utah State University, and every year that I've been a student, it always snows on finals week, and that's usually the first part of May, you know. You always get at least one snowstorm on finals week, first week of May, so that kind of gives you a gauge of what the climate can be like up here.
Yeah, so that is... That's pretty late in the season for snow, but yeah, I guess that makes paradise fish ideal. I guess they were one of the first exotic aquarium fish. After goldfish, they were one of the ones that showed up in aquariums because people could actually keep them alive without heaters. Yeah. Okay, well, excuse me. Could you tell us a little bit about the maintenance that you did on that setup during the summer?
Sure. You know, I thought I was going to have to do a whole lot of water changes right at the beginning there, but it rained so much almost in June that I was spending more time pulling water out of it so it didn't overflow my roof kind of, I didn't realize this until it started raining, but my roof kind of dumped right into it there.
Oh, no.
And so I was always bailing water out of there for a month and a half, and needless to say, I didn't do any water changes there, but, after that, I just kind of looked at it, and it was always crystal clear. The plants, I think, did a really good job of keeping nutrients out of the water. I never had hardly any algae growth, even attached algae growth. I didn't notice anything considerable at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
The plants were just that water hyacinth. It just grows like crazy once that sun gets on it. After it started, I started out with two small bunches about the size of a softball, each of them. And after a month, I was throwing away at least that much almost every week.
Yeah, so you were getting a lot of nutrient export just by
taking
that water hyacinth out. Okay.
Right, and I also had some duckweed that hitched right with the water hyacinth in there, so that was also pulling nutrients. And the anacharis looks great. It looks better than any I've ever seen in an aquarium. It was big pearl every day whenever the sun would come out. So, I mean, plants were, I think, just my number one filtration component. They were pulling. So I didn't end up doing any water changes at all until about halfway through August, just because of that. I just didn't see the need. I would always top it off whenever it looked low, but other than that, the water conditions were really great.
Wow. Well, you, like I said, some of the nutrient export was happening just because of the plants you're pulling out, and that makes sense. There might have had some trace element issues not changing, but it doesn't sound like you did. It sounded like everything worked out fine.
I did start putting some trace element mix into the plants the first month and a half or so, but they were just growing so out of hand after a while that I just decided it wasn't going to make much of a difference because they were just growing so fast.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you know about? Oh, it looks like the break is coming up, so we'll take a little break and then we'll be right back, everyone. So stay tuned. We're talking to Brady about his experience breeding paradise fish in a container pond this last summer.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There, that wasn't so painful now, was it?
We're back, everybody, here with Brady and his Paradise Fish experience. So, actually, before we go on, I want to ask you what you fed your Paradise Fish.
I just fed them just flake food once a day, and then I'd throw like a cube of bloodworms in there maybe once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they did fine on that, and, you know, whatever else they were getting in there, I'm not sure what probably just their own fry, I'm sure, but they did well.
And they probably got some floating insects from the surface, I imagine. Mosquitoes that came.
I never found a mosquito larvae in there, and, you know, it was really still water, so I'm sure they were getting laid, but the eggs were getting laid, but I don't think any were surviving to adulthood for sure.
Yeah, that's probably true. And there's nothing like live insects to bring fish into breeding condition. That'll do it.
Definitely, yeah.
So, at the end of the season, when you took down the tub, what were you expecting to find, and did what you find differ from your expectations, and if so, how?
I did a little bit. Well, just a side note. So, in July, when it started to get really warm during the day and the night, you know, here the night temperatures are always, it's a desert, you know, not much humidity, so the night temperatures get pretty low, but when my nighttime temperature started getting a little higher and the water stayed consistently warmer, the fish would spawn. And I watched them spawn at least 3 times, and I don't know, they could have done more times than that. They built a little bubble nest, and you'd see all the little wigglers in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was hoping that I was getting some kind of fry that was going to survive through this ordeal without getting eaten by the parents, because I didn't ever remove the parents. But the water hyacinths do have those really long, I don't know if you've ever seen, they have these really long feather-like roots.
Right.
I guess they're not really roots, but they go down into the water. So I thought, you know, there's plenty of hiding space. I was expecting I might find some juvenile fish at the end of the summer. That was kind of my goal, I guess, when I started out. In the summer, about the mid-September, it started getting a little too cold at night, so I decided to take the fish out. And so I took the parents out. I didn't remove all the plants. I just kind of moved them aside and tried to look down in there, and I just didn't see anything in there. So I figured, oh, that's kind of a bust. I was a little bit, you know, sad about that. But about 2 weeks later, and it was starting to get kind of cold, I was walking past, and I saw this little flicker, like the surface water just broke, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, that looked like a fish. And so I walked over there and started just pulling all the plants out. And trying not, you know, just looking down in there. And there I saw this little about 3/4 inch long paradise fish. So I got really excited. I went and got a bottle and a net and went and caught it. And it was a little male paradise fish, a little 3/4 inch one. And I was really excited, happy about that.
Yeah.
Then it wasn't until 2 weeks later when I was actually taking the plants out that I noticed there was another one in there. You know, they were just hiding out so good. I just never just seen until then. And so I came out of the season with 2 additional juvenile fish, you know, only about a 3/4 inch long. The one I pulled out 2 weeks earlier and brought inside was a lot bigger by this point because he had 2 weeks to grow, you know, in warm water temperatures. And the other one was still stunted a little.
Mm-hmm.
But they're both grown up. They're both males. They're just beautiful fish. I've got both of them still.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's nothing like being surprised by baby fish, that feeling you get, that rush of adrenaline.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a great little experience. So I was pleased. You know, at first I was a little disappointed because I didn't get any, and I thought, you know, I should have had at least one, but I ended up with 2, and, you know, that was plenty. I don't have a whole lot of tanks to distribute all these male fish through anyway, so 3 was just about right.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's nice not to have to figure out where to put 50 of them or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think you're going to maybe put the setup back up again next summer with the paradise fish in it, or do it with different fish?
Yeah, definitely. Depending on where I'm landing, I just finished up my schooling this semester, so I I'll be out getting a job somewhere. I don't know where I'm going to land exactly, but if the situation's right, definitely I'm going to set it up. I don't know if I can get some power, maybe some aeration. I think I might try something else as well. Maybe some, I'm thinking maybe Rosie Barbs or Zebra Daniels or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on, you know, climate and other things.
Yeah, there's quite a few species that are fairly hardy that people don't necessarily think of, but yeah, those could be some good choices. Have you thought about doing white clouds?
Yeah, a little bit. I definitely read into that at first. I think they'd be an ideal fish as well. And I have kept white clouds before when I was younger.
Yeah, and if the water's cool, they'll breed like crazy. That's been my experience. When I had white clouds in Hawaii, I actually got them from a breeder in Hawaii who kept his outside where it was a little bit too warm for them to breed. And he said to me, very few people are able to get these to breed. I can't get them to breed. And I took them home, put them in a 10-gallon tank in my house where it was about 82 degrees in my house without any heating. And they weren't breeding. But then I switched them into a tank at work and where
Which
the air conditioning kept it at about 70 degrees, and I just suddenly had about 50 fry in the tank, and the parents didn't even eat them. So in terms of getting a lot of fry in a short period of time by keeping them in cool temperatures, that would be possibly a fish to try.
Yeah, I'll definitely keep that in mind. I think that'd be a great one.
Now, what would you change if you could change anything, if you had to change anything, or about what you did, other than species? Anything you would do with your setup that you would change?
I don't know if I have enough experience to really know what to change yet. Other than if I want to keep more fry, I think I probably want to take the parents out after I saw them spawn. And then hopefully that I'd have enough, you know, biota and things to get some fry to raise up in there. I think that would be the one thing, maybe, if I was really trying to get more fry. But, you know, I just kind of wanted to see what would come out, and that worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you saw them spawn at least 3 times.
Yeah.
Now, was there anything that you noticed that was a spawning trigger, or is it just you happened to look and there they were spawning, or was it more that you caught them after the fact and you saw the bubble nest and the eggs and everything, or how did that work out?
I saw the bubble. It was after the fact. I don't know, but my experience with these fish, for example, in the fall when I brought them in, and they'd been in that cold water, you know, and I brought them into the house where it was warm, and I just put them in a 5-gallon bucket for a few days with some plants in it, just because I didn't have a place for them right away.
Right.
And they spawned that the next day. So I think it's just a temperature thing, as far as I can tell. As long as there's no surface tension breakup, you know, there's no aeration, or the surface of the water is flat,
mm-hmm.
and the temperatures are right, I think they'll spawn every time. I think they're really easy spawners that way. It's my experience.
And did you notice they chose a particular spot or certain conditions in a particular area of the tank to spawn or to make the nest?
I noticed the male spawn. He built his nest in the exact same place every time. But it was underneath one of the leaves of one of the water hyacinths. But it wasn't the same water hyacinth every time, but it was in the same spot as far as geographic-wise in the container pond. You know, I was always throwing out these water hyacinths. But it was always right there under the leaf, right in the front. Same spot all 3 times.
I wonder if was it on the shaded side or the bright side of the container pond, or?
I guess it would be the brighter side, but it was the side furthest away from the house. So, I don't know what made him choose that spot, but, well, it was kind of close to an open area as well, where I could keep it open to see the fish. So that maybe he just wanted to spend more time there with the light, I'm not sure.
Could be.
But I just had to keep a little bit open area so I could feed him and so I could, you know, keep tabs on him, because those water heights could just cover that whole surface area in just no time at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. It was great.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that you were able to join us. Thank you for being willing to do that. If you could give any advice to someone setting up a container pond, what would you tell them?
You know, just just kind of look at your, I think the most important thing is just understand kind of what your temperatures are going to be like in your area, and you know, what your conditions are, and just do some research and make sure you get the right fish, I guess, is the most important thing. And have fun with it. Do a little research, and it's not hard to do. You know, I didn't know, I've never met anybody up here that's done it. I never talked to a person that had actually done it. I just took what I could find online and did my best, and it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, that's a very good message. Just do your research first, and you're likely a lot more likely to succeed as you did in having a good experience with it. All right, well, once again, we'd like to thank Brady for joining us on Aquarimax this week, and remember to call us, leave us an email. You can also contact us on Facebook now or on Twitter, so please keep your comments, your calls, and your messages coming, and we'll catch you next week. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.